AOPA presents Never Again, true pilot stories from the world of general aviation. In this episode, sparks fly and tension mounts in a Mooney cockpit. Find out what happens in Seeing Sparks by Richard Harris. It was a beautiful autumn afternoon, and I was enjoying it. I dropped off my passengers, the airplane owner's family, in Asheville, North Carolina, and was flying home to Orlando, Florida. I was an experienced flight instructor and aspiring professional pilot, and knew the second leg of the trip would give me time to admire the speed and efficiency of the Mooney 201 I was flying, and build valuable cross-country and night flying experience, as the second half of the return flight would take place after dusk. About 2 hours into the southbound flight, near Jacksonville, the sun had already gone down, and the airplane was performing flawlessly. The cockpit enveloped me like a comfortable cocoon. To my left, I saw the familiar city lights along the Florida coast, and the Mooney's IFR panel made the navigation simple. Everything was routine 30 minutes later as I began my descent west of Daytona Beach. Sanford's lights were beginning to come into view at my 11 o'clock position. Lightning flashed in the distant south and southwest, but appeared far beyond my destination. My journey was nearing an uneventful conclusion. Or so I thought. Jacksonville Center handed me off to Orlando Approach, and I dialed in and activated the new frequency. I keyed the mic and reported my altitude and receipt of the ATIS. Then, just as the controller acknowledged my transmission and began to provide my next clearance, the cockpit suddenly went dark. Everything outside the aircraft took on the brightness of a movie screen in a darkened theater. Suddenly, the radios, autopilot, panel lights, and exterior lights were gone. The engine continued purring along, but I was dumbfounded about what had just taken place. The transition from a fully functioning airplane to being totally void of electricity had taken less than 60 seconds. I was dumbfounded. What was going on? I tried to gather my thoughts. I recounted training sessions and remembered everything I could about the electrical system, but I hadn't practiced any scenario exactly like this one. Thankfully, I was still flying in visual conditions. I picked up a flashlight and aimed its beam of light at the lower left portion of the instrument panel where the master switch was located. It was, quite surprisingly, in the off position. Why was that? I flipped it to the on position, and that's when the real trouble began. The panel came back to life. But as it did, sparks began flying from the lower right portion of the instrument panel. Then something, I had no idea what, fell to the floor, and it was glowing. I flipped the master switch off again, and the panel returned to darkness. The adrenaline kicked in, and I fought to keep thinking clearly. I kept my left hand on the yoke and grabbed my kneeboard with my right hand, and used it to swat at the glowing object on the floor, in an attempt to keep it from catching the carpet on fire. I could smell smoke in the cockpit. I had been cleared to descend to 2,000 feet and continued down towards the assigned altitude. I had one eye on the floorboard and considered landing at Sanford's airport, which was in sight off my left. But did I need to land there? There were no more sparks, and I knew that controllers would expect me to continue on to my planned destination at Orlando, just 4 or 5 miles ahead. I decided to continue southbound to Orlando. The avionics were gone, but I didn't need their guidance to find my way to the airport. The city lights did that, and I used the flashlight to confirm my speed and altitude with airspeed indicator and altimeter. There was more lightning to the south, but it was still well beyond my destination. ATIS had reported VFR conditions just a few minutes ago. Level at 2,000 feet, I slowed the airplane and made a conscious effort not to rush. I knew the approach controller would notify the controller that he had lost radio communication with me, and that my transponder had surely dropped from his radar scope, but I was uncomfortable just showing up at night with no lights and no radio. Plus, I'd need time to manually lower the landing gear, and knew I'd be making a no-flap landing. I flipped the master switch back on momentarily, and there were no fireworks this time. I turned the electrical power on again, long enough to communicate my intentions to the tower, lower the landing gear, and let the tower controllers see the flashing strobes to confirm my position. I considered leaving the electrical power on, but why take the chance? I shut the master switch off again and made an uneventful approach and landing. I taxied the Mooney back to its hangar and shut down. On the floorboard, I could see the charred remains of some wires, but not much else. The next day, a mechanic inspected the airplane and told me some of the work that had been done on its electrical system was substandard, and that the main electrical bus wire had been rubbing and chafing against the sharp edge of a metal box. It was only a matter of time before it cut through the insulation. Fortunately, the inevitable break took place in good weather and at a time when no passengers were on the aircraft. I later learned that the master switch was designed to automatically go to the off position in case of major electrical problems, and the system had been working properly to counter the failures it sensed. Years later, as I went on to flying jets with far more complex systems, I learned not to be so hasty flipping switches and pulling and pushing circuit breakers. The Never Again Podcast is brought to you by AOPA, the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, and by the Air Safety Foundation. You can read more Never Again stories online at aopa.org/neveragain. You can also visit the Air Safety Foundation at aopa.org/asf. The Never Again Podcast is produced by Royce Earle. Thanks for listening. Fly safe.